The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everybody. Part of what I was going to speak about tonight had to do with the idea of improvisation and that we don't really know what's going to come next. This has been sprung on me just immediately with this this new weird little thing that's hooked behind my ear. And also sitting up on top of this thing is very different, awkward. As I got up here, I thought of that scene from the Dead Poets Society where he has everybody come and stand on the teacher's desk and look out. I feel like I'm standing on the teacher's desk for the first time. So, good evening, everybody. This is my first time back to the Zendo since our summer retreat that just ended a little more than 2 weeks ago. And I'm still carrying it with me a little bit. And on reflecting on it, I was thinking about when it was time to leave. And I was remembering some days past when I used to be a counselor, or actually, that was a long time ago, camp counselor, but then more recently, about, you know, it ended about 15 years ago, I did about 7 or 8 years at this sleepaway camp, music camp. And it always got me, it always was very interesting to me at the end, because you'd have these teenagers that were meeting each other for the first time and falling in love and doing all these, and having all these experiences together. And then at the end of their time together, they are all crying and hugging each other. And you know, at the end of this retreat, I was feeling some similar things, although I was really ready to go because the weather was very brutal this summer. Been reminded of the growl weather today as well. But so I was really ready to go, but at the same time, there was still this, there was this feeling of some kind of a mysterious, powerful emotion that was, I don't know, that was making me feel a little weepy about leaving this place that I was ready to run out of a few days before the end. And I was thinking about the difference, you know, why some of us might feel that as full-grown adults at a retreat, and the difference between that and what these teenagers experienced on the summer camp. And I was thinking that even though we don't talk to each other on retreat, you know, we're in silence the whole time, there's something about... Are you having trouble hearing me? No? Okay. There's something about going to a place. In my notes, I wrote going there. We go there. I wrote there in big words. Well, we go to some place that we don't ever really go to fully otherwise when we're at retreat. And there's something about being in an environment where we go to that place with others, with other people. And it's like we're all going to that place together, and we're all with each other, and we're all witnessing each other. And when you go to that place, in my experience, it can bring up a lot of feelings of vulnerability, feelings that the reason that we don't go to these places a lot because it brings up vulnerable feelings. Places that are usually hidden and not exposed are all of a sudden have come to the surface and are a lot more exposed. We're actually touching them. And there is, I think, also a feeling of freshness, a real feeling of energy that happens when we go there, but also uneasiness and awkwardness as well, especially when it's time to leave and we're going back into the world. And this is where I think our practice helps us. helps us to reveal ourselves. And a very large part of our practice, I think, is how to hold these feelings or to hold this vulnerability and really own it, really own the things that come up as ourselves and as our life. And do that as we navigate through just all the things that happen to us on a daily level, whether it's just all the distractions that we have or the issues that arise in us. So, you know, on retreat, it's a lot easier because we have a lot of time. We're brewing in this atmosphere all the time, and these things slowly come up, and we almost don't even realize that they're coming up, and all of a sudden we're looking at and touching these very tender parts of ourselves. But in our everyday lives, it's different. It's very easy for them to slip away. You know, it's very easy for someone to cut you off in a subway and get really pissed off, and all of a sudden you're taken away somewhere else. And a lot of those things that were exposed can easily slip back to being hidden. So I was thinking I could talk today about some ways we can use our practice to help with that, to help with staying in our experience when the unexpected arises. And so I wanted to talk about two things, about form, which we use a lot of in Zen, and flow. So I've been involved in the aspects of liturgy and in the Zendo for a number of years now, and the liturgy practice is completely about form. And even as we come here today, you know, there's forms, right? We turn a certain way when we're going to walk and do the kinhen. We bow to our cushions. You know, we have all this form. But the more that I work with form, the more I'm beginning to see that it is a support. Form is there for a support, not for a rule or a law. It's there to help us be free. I think it's a way to help us maintain that authentic part of ourselves that arises, and it's kind of designed to help us hold it and stay there. And it helps us to hold that within the flow of the universe, within the flow of how things just happen on a daily basis, right? The flow of the universe, time stops for no one, and form is a way of helping us deal with that fact. You know, I guess it's like the difference between being a beat poet and a writer. You know, someone that can write and go back and correct and go back and say, no, that's not right. Or a beat poet where it's just like, in the moment, whatever word comes out is out there in the universe and you can't take it back. And this is, I think, how we live our lives. And I think it's important for us to not mix up the difference between form and flow. I think a lot of times we can get very rigid and make the mistake that form is flow. That as long as you're in the form and you're doing things correctly, it's the flow. But I don't see it that way. And I think that that's a mistake that that can make things fundamentalist at the core. So an example is in our zazen. Right? In our zazen, we are free for our minds to just roam and go anywhere. We have the whole universe for our minds to go to. But we're advised to keep a form, to keep a posture, to keep our body in a certain position for our thumbs to just very lightly touch We have a breathing practice. Some people breathe and they count breaths. Some people or just follow their breath. Some people work on koans. Some people work on shikantaza, which is the art of just sitting, right? So we have all these forms for just sitting still, right? It's, in a sense, these forms are the guidelines that let us know when we have lost our awareness of the flow. Losing count, slouching posture, noticing that your thumbs are like this or like this, your eyes are closed, you just counted to 28, right? So all those things help bring us back to what's happening right now, which is where freedom lies, where the freedom lies. So if we can be more flexible and bendable within our form, I think that's when we can touch on this idea of that we're improvising our lives, that what we do is improvisation all the time from the place of flow. It's the same thing in jazz. And so I was thinking about this as a jazz musician and as an improvising jazz musician. For example, you know, there are certain songs that are part of the jazz repertoire, right? Songs that are played thousands and thousands of times, you know? And, you know, it's the difference between, like, I was talking to a fellow musician the other day who was telling me about, he's friends with the drummer from Journey, from the band Journey. And he was saying that when Journey goes on tour, they have these really long rehearsals and they make it so everything is exactly the same every night. I would say within that, too, there is difference. But with jazz, you know, we take a song like If I Were a Bell, for example, an old standard. And the musician knows the tune. You know the song, you know the framework, and you know the form. But we don't know what's going to happen next. And you know, it also really changed through the history of jazz, which I don't want to get into too much here, but there's points when it's like very easy to hear the form. Like if you hear If I Were a Bell from the 40s, you can always kind of hear the melody somewhere. Even through the improvisation, you can still hear the melody. But as the music grew and grew, it started to become a little bit more obscure. And they weren't giving you a big crash at the top of the form anymore. So it wasn't obvious when the top of the form was. The musicians maybe started to experiment with changing the harmony a little bit or changing little aspects within the form. So it's all still within the form, but there's this great freedom to, I don't know. You don't know what's going to happen next. So if you're staying within the flow, you can let those things come. Sometimes there is the crash at the top of the form. Sometimes there's not. Sometimes there's a crash before the top of the form. Oh. Sometimes there's one far after. You know, so you never really know what's going to happen next. And that's how you can always keep form fresh. And I think the form of a song like that is very similar to a form of our daily schedule, right? We might know what time we're going to wake up. We might know what we're going to have for breakfast. We might know how we're planning to get to work. We might know what we expect to happen at work that day, right? But actually, we actually have no idea what's going to happen. You know, we have this idea of we know what's going to happen in our day. We have our schedule. So that's like the form, right? But within that form, how are we going to live that day? And I think this is how form can help us. Because if we can be loose enough with the form, seeing it as a support rather than a rule, it can help us to feel comfortable in that feeling of not knowing. Feel of not knowing what's going to happen next. And the freedom and the excitement, I think, comes within that, having no idea what's going to happen next. Even when we do the same thing every day, right? But it, maybe it's like, what's going to happen on the subway today? As opposed to, goddamn, taking the same train again today. And it is also in that not knowing what comes next where we can get rigid and try to control the future by mistaking form for flow. It's not supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be that way. And so that brought to mind a koan that kind of brings up this point. And it's Pai Cheng's Wild Ducks, a famous koan, maybe most of you have heard it. That once when Great Master Ma and Pai Cheng were walking together, they saw some wild ducks fly by overhead. Master Ma asked, "What is that?" Cheng said, "Wild ducks." Master Ma asked, "Where have they gone?" Cheng said, "They've flown away." Master Ma twisted Pai Cheng's nose, and Cheng cried out in pain. Master Ma said, "When have they ever flown away?" So first of all, when a Zen master ever asks something that seems simple, watch out. But I feel like Master Ma very compassionately, strangely as it sounds, brought Pai Cheng back into the flow. The flow is not just in our minds. We experience it with our whole being. And Pai started getting lost in his ideas. And Ma immediately brought him right back with a twist. Here is the flow. It's a little different than the idea of that. He was trying to get him out of his head. And in the Heart Sutra we chant, whenever we chant it, I wanted to say every day, but we don't chant it every day here. But we say, no eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. No color, sound, smell, taste, touch, phenomena. So eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, color, sound, smell, taste, touch, phenomena. So flow is all of these things, yet none of them, because once you label any of them, any one of those things, you're out of the flow. Once you say, that is the color of wood, it puts you in this kind of sticky mindset, you know, as opposed to, it's like there's so much going on in this wood that just saying that's the color of wood really doesn't give the experience of what looking at that wood is. I'm describing seeing instead of seeing when that happens. And sometimes we have to say, this is the color of wood. But a lot of times we don't. And Shikantaza, which is called the art of just sitting, that may sound very stagnant and boring from the description, but the act of Shikantaza is to be aware with all of your senses. So you're sitting still facing the wall, But your eyes are still working. Your nose is still working. Your ears are still working, right? You're not sitting there labeling everything that you're seeing, but we're taking in everything and experiencing the whole of it. So if you imagine all that's going on with your senses at any given moment, it is a very active practice, just sitting. And so is our ordinary daily life. It's a very active practice. We're always being inundated with distractions and facing different issues moment to moment all the time that have to do with sounds, smells, sights, tastes. What do we have that can bring us back to this moment the same way we have our posture in Zazen, or the same thing as... What can we do to twist our nose back to our experience? So Zazen is a way to practice being in the flow. But it's important to realize that it is a practice of our lives. It's the practice of being in the flow of the universe. It's the practice of being awake, which doesn't only occur on the cushion. We need to take this out after we leave here too. So I wanted to talk a little bit more just about music and another interesting connection that I saw. And that is in the word harmony. Because harmony is a word that we use a lot here also, specifically in describing sangha, a community. But harmony in music is something that can be a little bit more clearly defined in that it is the flow of music. And this is how I teach harmony to people. There's three aspects. There's three main aspects of harmony. That's called subdominant, dominant, and tonic. And harmony is always the movement through those three different areas. And, you know, subdominant literally means the note below the dominant, which is the fifth. Dominant is the fifth, and tonic is the root. You know, so, and this is a very common, it's the most common progression that you hear in music all the time, is 4-5-1. But there's many different ways of having this movement of harmony. And a lot of times when I have a class of musicians, we'll start talking about harmony. And so I'll say, okay, we have subdominant, dominant, tonic. I say, if you were to explain these three areas of music to someone who knows nothing about music, what words would you use to describe it? And this really ends up stumping musicians a lot. So it's like they don't really make this connection sometimes. It's just this technical form. It's just this technical idea of that this chord that begins at this note is the subdominant, this chord is the dominant, blah, blah, blah. But in order to understand the flow or the movement, I call it movement usually, but flow works perfectly here. Is to understand what the different qualities of these sounds are. They have very different qualities from each other. Tonic, we usually go in reverse because tonic is way more easy to describe. So tonic, the word that usually comes up most is home, at rest, final, relaxed, at ease, final. It's the final destination, right? The chord before that is the dominant chord, and that is the chord of dissonance. It's not at rest. It's where conflict comes in. It's where it's a sound that desperately needs to be resolved. And then you have the subdominant that comes before that, and this is the sound that prepares the dominant. So it is somewhat restful, but it's not final. It has this kind of spacey quality to it, like it's not really quite sure where it is. And that leads us into the dissonance, which then needs to finally be resolved. And in that formula right there, I think, is the art of any good storytelling or, any good story or even any good work of art has this aspect of this movement in it. And the interesting thing is that the most interesting part of that whole equation is always in the dominant area. It's in the area where there's conflict. It's in the area where there's dissonance, the area that needs to be resolved. If that wasn't there, music would be boring. It needs to be that in order for music to be interesting. And if we could imagine Sangha through this lens a little bit, I was just thinking about perhaps we've all had experiences like this where close friends or family that we've had an experience with where we've come head to head and had an obstacle with and had to actually deal with some issues. Usually at the end of that resolution, there's a deeper sense of closeness with that person. It's like when you can work through that dissonance, it becomes richer in some way. And I think when we realize this, then we have an easier time going to those places that we end up hiding, that we end up tucking away, that come out. When we realize that those places of feelings have within them that which is the most interesting or exciting part of our story, we can feel a little bit more ready to go there, I think. And that was the case for me too, you know. And for so many, I think that we, you know, in the mud and in the muck is where we find the jewel. And that's what I think this conflict is, or this uneasy part of music or our lives. So when we can go there, sometimes some really good things can happen. And when we can do that, when we can really go there and let what comes up be there and use that in our situation, then I think we are improvising our lives. And because even in the guidelines of the forms we're holding on to, we actually have no idea what will happen next, like I said before. So our actions with the community and around us are always improvisatory by nature. So how will your improvisation be? Will it be an attempt at being scripted, or will it be free? Will it be from a true place in you, or will it be stuck to some kind of restricting form? You know, other new thing about being up here is I have to print things in a larger text next time because I'm much further away. So I want to close with a poem by a great Zen poet named Ryokan that I think kind of encapsulates in eight lines a lot better what I've been trying to talk about for the last half hour. So Ryokan says, "After a night of rain, water covers the village path. This morning, the thick grass by my hut is cool. In the window, distant mountains the color of blue-green jade. Outside, a river flows like shimmering silk. Under a cliff near my hut, I was I wrote this wrong. Under a cliff near my hut, I cleaned out my sore ear with pure spring water. In the trees, cicadas recite their fall verse. I had prepared my robe and staff for a walk, but the quiet beauty keeps me here.